you know, it should be within academia that the very best research and development and truly the future of communications, right, is being built. That's where it should be happening. And so I think if we recast what is journalism education with an eye towards the future, I think it is completely indisputable that journalism education, at least in the undergraduate realm, you know, it has to continue. It just has to look slightly different than it does today.
Welcome to It's All Journalism. I'm Michael O'Connell. Today we're having a roundtable discussion on journalism education with three former guests of the podcast. Andrew Lee is an associate professor at American University and the author of The Wikipedia Revolution. Doug Mitchell is the founder of Next Generation Radio at NPR and the Journalism Diversity Project. He's also an adjunct journalism professor at Georgetown. Amy Webb is a digital media futurist and the founder of web media group Digital Strategy. She's working on a book about forecasting the future and finishing a book about the future of journalism education, which the Nieman Foundation at Harvard will be publishing in June. She also co-founded Knowledge Web Training and Spark Camp. Before we begin, a note about the audio. This was our first attempt doing a roundtable using Google Hangouts. For the most part, the audio of our guest is really good. For some reason, my mic isn't so great, so I've tried to edit down my questions as much as possible. We think we have a handle on the problem and hope to be able to do more roundtables like this in the future. So, enjoy.
So just so we can get people to associate your names with your voices, let's take a couple of minutes to talk to each of you about what you're currently working on. So let's start with Andrew. Andrew, what have you been up to?
So I'm right now at American University. It's kind of the fourth university. I'm doing a journalism curriculum, reconfiguration for. So it's been an interesting journey here in Washington, D.C. So I started my career at Columbia University in 1995 doing a new media makeover of the journalism school there. I've taught at University of Hong Kong to help start their program. Right before D.C., I was at University of Southern California and helped revamp that program. And now in American University, we're in the middle of revamping both undergrad and graduate programs. So this topic is near and dear to my heart.
So how about you, Doug? I take it you're away from home.
I'm currently in El Paso, Texas, and on a project funded by the Dow Jones Newspaper Fund. For the sixth year, we work with professors who are at Hispanic-serving institutions who are interested in remembering the basics in addition to what are the new tech tools out there that they could be teaching their students in terms of going out, getting stories, and reporting them. And 2 weeks ago, I was on a Next Generation project in Reno. So I did go home the week in between, so my family does remember what I look like.
So, Amy, what have you been up to lately?
So I have a couple of books in the works. One that I think is the one that's the most relevant for this conversation stems from my research as a visiting fellow at Harvard at the Nieman Foundation, where I've spent the past 9 months or so researching the future of journalism education, and I have a pretty strong viewpoint on what I think that future should look like, but I wanted to work with folks who sort of research professionally academia and change management to hone and refine that central hypothesis that I had. So that work is nearly done and will be available pretty soon. But my thinking is very holistic, so my thought is that it's not just about tenure or accreditation or curriculum reform, that the whole system needs to really change, and it needs to look a lot more like the R&D that we see in partnerships in the pharmaceutical arena, you know, and some of the other hard sciences. So I've been working on that, but my day job is as a futurist, and I run a company that I've been running for the past 10 years. And basically what I do day to day is help organizations figure out what is the future of X. And X can be a number of different things. So yeah, that's what I spend most of my time doing, and that involves a lot of travel. And so I tend to sort of be out and about and around. And it's neat to be on this podcast with Doug, who's a sometimes co-collaborator and co-conspirator, and with Andrew, who was at the J School of Columbia when I was there on the super top secret, awesome, nobody was ever allowed into it, fourth floor. I'm still not sure what he was cooking up back then. Maybe he'll tell us on the podcast.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we'll save that for the end. We'll have people maybe guess what that is. Amy, talking about this book that you're working on, the one that's coming out about journalism education, Neiman Reports did you did a piece for Neiman Reports that was sort of a preview or an excerpt from it, Blueprint for How to Make J-School Matter Again. And your research in that said that fewer than 25% of the working journalists you surveyed said a journalism degree is necessary for the profession. So I wonder, with that, you know, why are we having this conversation if that's the case? Why is it important that J-schools keep going? It's not necessarily a question just for you, but for everybody as well.
There's a lot to unpack there, so I want to maybe clarify a few things and then maybe kick off that part of the conversation. So I did a completely non-scientific study that would absolutely not meet any real rigor. So this is, you know, it's not a study intended for like an academic journal. But I didn't talk to a few people on the street. I talked to several hundred people, and some of that happened over a survey where data was collected, and some of it was interviews on the phone, and some of it was just conversations that I've been having. But the data that was easiest to quantify was the survey data, and so that's where that 25% comes from. You know, I will tell you that if I were to include the other feedback from the other sort of anecdotal conversations I had, that number would probably be lower. There would probably be even fewer people who would recommend it. So the question is, if I talk to our leading, you know, practitioners in journalism and people in the tech sector and people in the sort of media space about the relevancy of journalism, and everybody's saying there's no point, then why bother with it at all? And the reason for that is because, I think that there are some central tenets that are necessary in the field that students are not going to get elsewhere. And if it's not being, ethics, storytelling is one thing, but thinking through ethics, having a good understanding of the history, having some institutional knowledge, having a mechanism to pass along that institutional knowledge and that context, I think all of that is vitally important. But the other piece that's, I think, incredibly relevant and to me the most exciting is that, you know, it should be within academia that the very best research and development and truly the future of communications, right, is being built. That's where it should be happening. And so I think if we recast what is journalism education with an eye towards the future, I think it is completely indisputable that journalism education, at least in the undergraduate realm, you know, it has to continue. It just has to look slightly different than it does today.
What are your thoughts about that, Andrew and Doug?
Yeah, I'm largely in agreement with what Amy said. I think one of the arguments I make about the role of the journalism degree, because it's a very odd thing. You have a lot of folks who are respected in journalism who actually look down on people who have journalism degrees. There's some inherent bias in there. You tend to find that even more so in the UK and Australia, where they really do look down on the journalism degree as some kind of a pedigree for practicing the craft. It's a weird place where journalism schools sit, right? A lot of schools, a lot of universities, especially like Columbia, you kind of saw like law, medicine, and journalism as the professional degrees. Law and medicine, they have a certification process. Journalism doesn't. We should be glad that we don't have a certification process for journalism. The great thing is that the First Amendment allows anyone to participate in that. You don't have to be a member of a bar. You don't have to pass any type of certification for that. But it doesn't mean that we should do without journalism schools. As Amy said, there are things that you can do in the climate of a journalism school that you don't either have time for or are deprioritized in the marketplace, right? So if you're with a news organization where deadlines matter the most, you don't have time to stop and think about a lot of those things, not just ethics, but also designing for the future and trying new experiments out there. So I think there's a lot of value in journalism schools providing that role. And the other thing that we can talk about later in the podcast, I think, is this whole question of whether journalism schools can make the journalism degree as a gateway degree to more than just what we recommend journalism students do right now, right? So for better or for worse, most journalism schools still have shoe leather municipal reporting as the cornerstone of a lot of what they do. And we really have to rethink whether that's the right way to go. I mean, just marketing-wise, we are not really appealing to a lot of students who might see journalism as an exciting thing, that they don't really want to be an urban beat reporter to start off with. At Columbia, for example, that's what the cornerstone has been for many, many years. They've just started to reform that. Can the journalism degree be something that we can attract people to get because they want to eventually work for NGOs or like the World Bank or the UN or for the Red Cross? Right now, we don't do a great job of that, and we actually shunt students who are not interested in pure journalism into PR or other types of programs. And it should probably be no surprise that those programs are doing really well. They've got plenty of students, plenty of money, and journalism schools are kind of struggling to figure out where they fit in this whole thing.
And actually, if I can just add something really quickly to that, you know, there is a so again, we surveyed, as part of this research I did, we surveyed all of the programs that are, or a big swath of the programs that are accredited. You know, the professors at a lot of these schools really look down on students if they, you know, are getting a journalism degree and they don't go out and then do journalism with it, which is a real shame. You know, from my point, so I didn't major in journalism. I'm a poli sci and econ major in my undergrad. You know, and at the time, those were the things you majored in if you wanted to go into any number of fields. You know, law, if you wanted to go into public policy, you know, research, you know, you name it. Journalism wasn't. Journalism was like you majored in that if you wanted to be a journalist. And from my point of view, and I think probably Doug and Andrew share this point of view, you know, we're entering a sort of knowledge economy where the skills that a journalist would learn as part of that undergraduate program, again, assuming that the curriculum is and the process is recalibrated, you know, those skills should be much, you know, should be far superior. Mm-hmm. And the context and the things that a student in an undergraduate journalism is that program is learning should be far superior to that of somebody who comes out of poli sci or history or English. It should be one of the most desirable degrees. It's the challenge, you know, to some extent has to do with marketing, as Andrew said, and to some extent it has to do with realistically what's being taught.
Yeah, I would agree with everything that's been said. One of the things that I've started doing in the last year, I was introduced to this term called concerted cultivation. I was having a conversation with a chief diversity officer at a university, and he brought it up in the context of diversity. But to me, it's a little larger than that, and that is, what are we exposing young people to as they matriculate through college to get a degree? Are they being exposed to the right things? Are they being taught the right things? I find in the last couple of years and talking to professors and doing the projects I've done at universities and such, that a lot of the students are not being exposed to, for example, how a bill gets through the legislature, an understanding of government. Do you need journalism to provide that, or should there be a change up in the curriculum to where if you're going to go in a public service, I've always been in public service journalism, I've always worked in not-for-profit media, should you then have a major in that and then make sure that when you graduate, you have some sort of certification in understanding how government works or doesn't work. Because I think it's important for us, those of us who work in public service, to know what we're talking about, know what we're doing. And in addition to the technology, I think there's just a knowledge gap that is not being served.
Well, let me ask you this, since just as sort of almost a back up a little bit from the discussion, I think maybe it would be good for us to sort of define what is a journalist today? What does a journalist today need to be? So that maybe once we answer that or get an idea of what that is, you know, then maybe we can build a curriculum around that. And at the same time, I guess we've also got to figure out let's ask that question.
I think that's tricky. I don't think we should be in the business of defining. I don't know. Maybe I disagree with what I just said. well, here's the thing, though. Andrew said something a couple minutes ago about, you know, it's a good thing that journalists aren't certified. And for a second there, I was like, yeah, Andrew, you're right. And then I was like, wait a minute, Andrew, I think you're wrong. and I'm not saying that journalism should be a licensable profession like medicine, but I do think that having that degree should mean something. It should it should represent this sort of body of knowledge and the a rigorous study and, you know, all of these things. So anyway, with that said, I just want to use that to preface what I'm about to say next, which is going to sound contradictory, but I don't think we should define what a journalist is and what they're doing.
Let me refine my question then. What do we want a journalism graduate to be?
Well, I mean, I'll throw out a definition that Amy probably knows quite well from the former dean or acting dean of Columbia J School, at Steve Isaacs, used to always say in his public affairs class, you know, it's the pursuit of the truth. And I would add in the public interest, where the public interest could be much broader than what we traditionally see as being a newspaper reporter or being a public radio journalist. And what I've been doing in D.C. is expanding that to encompass two other areas, which include encyclopedia writing, like Wikipedia, or working with museums or oceanographic institutes or scientific organizations. And we see that a lot of our grads from journalism school don't wind up in traditional journalism professions, and they wind up working for NIH or communications for foundations. And unfortunately, we kind of, you know, say that these people have left journalism, and it's almost like a shaming of these types of folks, right?
Yeah,
we always see
journalism
as like a calling, as a priesthood, and if you don't do what is traditionally journalism, you've left the priesthood.
Say patriarchy.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's have that conversation.
But here's the thing, though. Here's the thing. So, you know, the term, so much it has evolved, and we haven't evolved the term of journalist. So, you know, if you think back to medicine, The lexicon used to describe what is a doctor has really evolved over the past 200 years. And today, you can't just call yourself a doctor. Most people would not just call themselves a doctor. They're going to modify that by explaining specifically what type of doctor they are, and that's in response to our modern scope of medicine, which is highly refined and specialized. You know, I would say that in journalism, we have a similar situation. The means by which journalism is done have changed over the past 100 years. And acts of journalism are defined in different ways by different people. So, you know, there's journalism done in the public interest. There's investigative, you know, journalism. What do you call the people who are writing for, you know, throw a dart at a tech blog, right? Would you call those people journalists? You know, I would say that they are doing reporting, but I would not, you know, many of them I wouldn't say are sort of big J journalists, right? So I think we run into problems when we attempt to define a profession which is continually in flux. So I think, I think that's a big problem for everybody, right?
Right. If we recognize the fact, it's like the way we refer to reporting. We're telling the best truth that we can at the moment. We're creating the best journalists that we can at the moment, knowing that as we let them out, their degree may not give them everything they need to weather the career, their career path that they've chosen.
Sure, but I mean, what do you do with the people? So on the one hand, you know, all signs point towards having some kind of knowledge specialization.
Mm-hmm.
So don't just graduate with a journalism degree. Have some knowledge in something, right? What happens if your knowledge is in politics? You know, we've got people who have blogs and call themselves political journalists, you know, who are doing nothing that looks like political journalism. Or, you know, I think it's a very tricky area. I don't have an answer. I'm just sort of more pointing that out.
Okay. Well,
to say that, you know.
What is it then that journalism schools need to be doing right now in the new reality of what's going on in our industry?
Well, I'll just say for my industry, the public media industry, there is a tiered system. I see that, and particularly with the work at NPR and the interns that we get, not all J schools are created equal. There are some schools in which you can go and you can go to American University and you can get exposed to this concerted cultivation that things that Andrew is doing and Amy Eisman are doing and several of the other professors are doing, and we get great people who come to the network as interns, in some cases much more sophisticated than the people there actually doing the work, which creates tension. They then go on to something else, and they don't often stick with the company, and the company needs them. There are places where I've been in the last year or so, universities that are not American University, not Northwestern, not Berkeley, but they have students there who are just as interested in journalism and technology and telling stories, but they don't have the access, and the schools don't have the resources. So for me, it's I do what I can by taking the resources I have and going places where people may not have the access that the other schools do. But I don't know. It's I try to stand in the intersection and try to find people who are interested in a lot of things. So journalism education, what should it be doing? I don't really know what the answer is for that.
Well, that's what we're here to find out. We're gonna
I don't know if there's one answer. I don't know if there's just.
I have a pretty strong feeling about this. You know, journalism. I'm gonna start this answer with by negating it. I can tell you what journalism education should not be doing. It should not be teaching specific tools or specific pieces of software. It should not just be teaching reporting. It should not just be teaching writing or broadcast tools. The challenge is that, again, you know, journalism, it's fascinating to me, but the more that the field of communications broadens, the narrower that the teaching has become and the curriculum has become, you know. And what should it be doing? It should be, you know, looking past and present. So don't just, you know, a history and survey of American journalism, I think, is vital, but it's got to continue past the year 2000, right? And it's got to, and not just to show like really cool stuff like Snowfall. It has to talk about, you know, a very, very sort of broad context of what's happening outside of media that has to do with technology, so stuff like that. It also needs to include the other pieces of the news ecosystem. So, you know, this is one of the things that I have in my blueprint in my research, but every kid who graduates from a journalism program should have a sense of what a P&L is. They should have a sense of how the digital ad market works. They should have a sense of how news companies make and lose money. That's a vital piece of this, I think. You know, and standard methods for research outside of reporting, but how do you do a statistical analysis? How do you, you know, how do you do that kind of stuff? I've looked at curriculum from you know, dozens and dozens of universities, and while, you know, and for the most part, they require the bare minimum when it comes to math, right? So, like, any math class works. When in reality, there are plenty of classes that have to do with, you know, theory and understanding how to solve problems and how math helps you solve problems, and, you know, those kinds of classes are going to be far more useful. I think it's about getting slightly, you know, away from those trenches and working more holistically, again, with a strong eye on the future, really strong eye. So these class projects and these research projects that I see coming out of a lot of universities, you know, they're already behind. They're not only not looking forward, they themselves are behind. So you're really doing a disservice for a kid who 4 years from now is going to think that they're at the cutting edge when really that gap in the numbers starts compounding.
Is the problem that maybe some schools are sort of chasing technology, that they're saying, okay, our students need to know how to do this type of coding or this type of multimedia, when in fact they should be teaching more of a, you know, you say holistic, but is it more of a liberal arts approach to creating a whole student?
So, right. So my feeling is that a journalism degree needs to be incredibly rigorous, a very, very rigorous liberal arts type of program with a strong experiential learning component. But from my point of view, that shouldn't come in a classroom. That learning should come, you know, in an experiential way. So part of the program, part of what I've built includes a two-semester co-op program, and the plan with that is to have everybody rotate through different stations where they are getting real-world hands-on experience doing all of the different pieces of you know, what happens in a newsroom. The question about why there's such a focus on tools, you know, Andrew's probably the right person to answer that question because he's in the middle of it.
Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just jotting some notes here because Amy makes some really good points, and one of the things that we're trying to do in journalism schools is trying to figure out, as we put more things in that basket of what we think journalists should be doing, how do we keep up with that, given that the majority of journalism schools still have a lockstep learning type of system? If you're in a grad school, you can maybe innovate quite a bit because you kind of control your whole thing, your whole curriculum. But if you're an undergraduate, that's really tough because you're kind of locked in some ways to the structure of the larger undergraduate system, right? So that's one of the challenges we have, not only at AU, but at the other universities I've worked with, which is why grad school is a little bit easier to play with, because you can actually say, let's do a 5-week module here and a 7-week module there. And
yeah, but there, but some people have gotten around that. So Dean Marianne Reed, who's now the, she just got a promotion. She's at West Virginia University, where Doug went to school, right, Doug?
I'm on their visiting committee. I went to school.
Oh, that's right.
But I'm on their visiting committee.
Yeah. But yeah, so she's done some really interesting things where they've done some pilot programs. Now, it's a smaller program, so they may have, they may be a little bit more nimble, but they've really done some great experimentation around pilot programs. You know, from my point of view, journalism programs are nothing like, undergraduate journalism programs are very dissimilar from other academic programs on campus, and that's the problem. If we were able to bring them more closely aligned to what we see in other departments, I think that that is, you know, that that benefits the departments overall. The challenge may be the faculty within the department, but again, that's a separate issue.
Well, and that's what I was going to pick this up with, and that is, you know, I'm here with a collection of professors, instructors, adjunct instructors from universities pretty much along the border of the United States, and there is constant chatter, even if in joking fashion, about, you know, they complain about the dean, or they complain about the college president, or they complain about this, or they complain about that, and there seems to be a large wall of China between what they're doing in a practical sense, which is in a classroom, people are behind computers, and they're didactically learning how to use specific editing programs so they can write and tell and distribute, publish and distribute stories. And that is essentially what we do now. It's a little interesting to feel like when someone graduates from school, like Amy said, that they're a little behind. And maybe that's just the result of schools, and I think you're right, Amy, I think they are not focused on where they're going. Journalism is a trade to me. People get a job, they get skills, and they get a job, and it's always been that way. But I think that's got to, I think that too has to change in some way. Maybe we need to create broader people. We need to create people who are interested in talking to people who are different from themselves. There's still a lot of silos. The technology has broadened a little bit, but you still have people who are only assimilating with themselves, each other. And I think that has to change, too.
Allow me to try and employ a metaphor here. Living in the D.C. area, people complain about mass transit and traffic, and they fail to realize the fact that a lot of the solutions or the way that things are because there are several different municipalities that have to pay into that system, and they have each have their own separate political system. So the thing with journalism education is you have a journalism school that has its own internal politics, a university that has its own internal politics, and if you want to try to incorporate something from the journalism industry, which is having its own issues, to try to get them to give money or offer opportunities for students to learn or internships, you've got all these things sort of spreading around. And that doesn't sound like a formula that makes things move very quickly or nimbly in this environment.
Well, they don't have. So here's the thing, though. The kind of change that I'm talking about and the kind of change that's necessary is the kind of durable change that is, you know, can be spearheaded, hopefully, this year, but is, you know, in practical terms, is going to take a decade of, you know, to cement and change. I mean, that's the challenge here, because everybody, you know, you're dealing with emotions, right? A lot of people already feel like they're so far behind. So the very notion of investing in some kind of program to sort of rethink and reform that we know from the outset is going to take a decade, you know, isn't going to sit well in a lot of people's stomachs. But that is the that is the only way that change can happen, is through longer term planning. But, you know, with that attitudinal investment, you know, you wind up a decade from now in a completely different place, I think. This is not the kind of thing that happens overnight.
Yeah, I think industry can have a lot to do with this as well. I think there's a lot of the change that has happened in J schools has been driven by industry, and it's the needs that it perceives it has. I sit, again, in the intersection between, in the public media industry, between one of the major networks and a lot of the stations and a lot of the schools. And I think there has to be more partnership between schools and industry to each identify what each other needs, so they can create graduates who can serve those needs.
So when you say students and industry, tell me, unpack that a little bit. What do you mean?
Okay, so a lot of the projects I do, they are boot camps. In fact, I just had a deadline last night for a project we're doing at our station at KUT in Austin in August. the J School there had, until they got a new director, had not worked with us, us meaning the professionals who do the mentoring and the radio station, in finding students who are interested in the work that we do. A new director comes in, and bam, it changes overnight. And I represent, so I'm the industry part, the station is the industry part, and the school is right there. It's the University of Texas at Austin Journalism School. So all it took was one person to create a level of cooperation between three pieces to find the people that we're looking for, and then we put on a project in which they were going to do something like a data-driven project based on the 10 districts, selected districts in Austin, and every student's going to report on one of those districts using data to find something interesting in it. So it really, that's why I say industry can have a hand in it. There needs to be better partnerships, and if we can get that, I think industry and schools and individuals can be served in a way that really isn't going on now.
So is there enough interest in industry and enough interest in the J schools to sort of commit to this 10-year change that Amy is talking about?
It depends on who wags the dog.
It also depends on where the J schools are situated, right? I mean, the opportunities for American U and Columbia and Medill are much better in that we have ready partners. Like for American U, it's USA Today, NPR, Newsium, these folks we can work very closely with. We have a joint program at the Washington Post. A little different for the schools that are not located near a very high-density media hub. In that sense,
yep.
You have to work a little bit harder, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's essentially what we found. But I have intentionally gone away from the major urban areas because I always feel like that they're, like you just said, there are students and young people who have access to good schools with good professors who have an understanding of where things are. Mm-hmm. They crank out some great people every year. But that's not everybody. That's like a 10% kind of thing. So
right.
I try to take the resources I have to places where we need to find more and more. Our population is changing. So who are the people that are going to school at the University of Nevada, Reno? Their freshman class this last year was 42% minority, and it's only going to grow, and that's in Nevada. So we need to, as an industry, recognize what the numbers say and go to places where we can at least introduce ideas about what it is that we're looking for, if we actually have an idea of what we're looking for. And that's a whole other thing.
Right.
And there are also lots of different types of journalism. I mean, we get caught up in these conversations of large metropolitan areas and the demands that they have, but smaller markets, the smaller newspapers, smaller news outlets, they need journalists as well. And, you know, right. I don't know.
They also need to know what's happening, what's coming on the horizon. I'm not going to divulge who the client is, but we advise a lot of different kinds of organizations, and one of the organizations is a conglomerate of smaller news organizations, and you know, they face the exact same challenges. In some cases, they're even more acute than the New York Times. You know, so mm-hmm. I would say that geography and size, there is no correlation necessarily between geography and size and the needs that exist. You know, one other thing I think is important to note, oftentimes, and this happens in any industry, you look at the industry leader, and we define industry leader by, you know, the one that has the most power or prominence or is making the most money or whatever. You know, we look to that industry leader for next best practices. And what I would say is that, you know, in academia, it may not, historically, when we look for reform and, you know, cool new changes or innovation, you know, or whatever, we tend to look at some usual suspects.
Mm-hmm.
And they tend to be places like Columbia and Northwestern. And what I would say is that there are pockets of innovation happening outside of those universities. And it may very well be that the next 10 best, the next list, you know, 10 years from now, the list of best journalism schools may look quite different than they do today. And I just say that as a way to sort of hopefully plant the seed in everybody's minds that I think if we can all approach the future of journalism education in a more egalitarian way, it would be better for everybody, you know, across the board.
Yeah.
I agree with that. One of the things that we found in the podcast is a lot of recent grads are having to pick up new skills to make themselves more marketable. They graduate with a degree, but they find once they get into the marketplace that there are a lot of skills they don't have to make themselves marketable. So how can we encourage journalists to sort of grab the concept that you're really a lifelong learner, that you're always going to be trying to learn new skills and improve yourself?
Well, I would argue that there are almost everybody I met is trying to learn something and get better at what they do. I think the problem is they don't really know, or maybe it's too Pavlovian, where we dangle some technology, and, oh, I have to go learn that. So I'm going to go learn that, and then I'll be today's journalist. And then another technology comes along. Oh, I have to go learn that. Maybe that's what we're suggesting here, and that is maybe it needs to turn around a little bit. And maybe instead of having industry drive the needs, maybe educators can drive what the need is. I mean, the work, Andrew, that you're doing, particularly as I launched my Georgetown class, and the work you did with the National Museum of the American Indian, mm-hmm. It was, I don't know how we got on that conversation, but you told me about it. And I was like, oh, yeah, let's totally do that. Because, again, while I'm teaching the class, I'm still sitting in industry, and you did this interesting thing across town.
Right.
So
right.
I thought, yeah, let's. So maybe those are the kinds of things that as they partnerships and conversations happen, you know, there's a great ONA educators group where I constantly read it, and there's all this cool stuff going on and people asking questions. Then it becomes, how do we create a syllabus in which it can put in the classroom in which mm-hmm. it goes from there? And maybe, Andrew, you... with your experience, you can enlighten us on that.
Yeah, I think, you know, it goes back to something that Amy talked about before, which is that we're not just teaching a specific piece of software. We're teaching that piece of software as an instance of a larger thinking about digital capabilities going forward, right? So I think the dream of all of us as journalism educators in the journalism school context is to just make people really geeky and curious about the nature of how knowledge of the public interest is generated. It might be data journalism today, and you know what's hot now is like sensor journalism, drone-based journalism. Those are not something people talked about 5 or 7 years ago, but it certainly is in the same tradition of how do we get more cool, interesting stuff in front of the public so they can be better informed citizens, right? And if we are successful in doing that in terms of instilling this kind of passion for renewing people's skills going forward, I think we'd be very successful. And the project that we did with the Museum of the American Indian was, in fact, recognizing that conversations around the controversial, you know, Redskins
right.
name in D.C. was not just something happening in the sports journalism world and among Native American tribes, but the National Museum of the American Indian was at the center of the dialogue that was going on there. And if you think about it, what that museum was doing is exactly what journalists were doing too, is trying to mediate this conversation between Native American tribes and sports team owners and enlightened individuals. But we really never think of museums as partners
right.
with journalism schools in any
right,
way.
Right,
but they're completely
right.
overlapping in terms of what they're
right.
doing. And museums are going through the same kind of digital transformation that journalism schools have been going through as well, that they've formerly been very narrow in terms of what they've been looking at. And museum exhibits take, you know, 5 or 7 years to plan and execute, but they're a living cultures museum. They're trying to be on top of contemporary topics and entering into dialogue, you know, on a week-by-week basis. And that's very much what journalism entities are trying to do. And you're seeing this massive overlap, which makes it makes for a lot of exciting things that we can do in journalism school to collaborate with museums and what they're doing in the digital space.
So if you were to reverse engineer that a little bit...
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the heads right now of all the academics listening to this podcast saying, this is all well and good, but I have no time. I've got to teach four classes a semester, 3 classes a semester, plus I'm advising people, plus. And so one of the challenges is, you know, you're working as a discrete unit, right, within a college or university, and you're sort of relying on each other, and hopefully you're collegial, but, you know, it's really hard. It's hard to know what's coming next and what to pay attention to. I was speaking at a conference a couple years ago, and just for fun, I put together a syllabus that was meant to not be, like, I wasn't actually teaching a class. It was just, you've got the summer, here's some stuff to do over the summer to help you get prepared for fall. And it was a syllabus intended for journalism professors. And to my absolute astonishment, that thing was, like, went wild. Everybody was talking about it, and there were some people formed Facebook groups, and I can tell you for a fact that it's not because the syllabus was that great, because it wasn't. it was because I don't see anything else that exists right now. So, you know, one of the challenges is you may be motivated to know what's next, but you may not know how to figure out how to learn that, and it's not like you can log on to Coursera and just type in, tell me what's next so I can be a better journalism professor. You know, it's really hard. And one of the problems, I think, again, that is solvable is that there aren't really institutes or gatherings for professionals that don't have to do with tenure. And that's not knocking tenure, but, you know, nobody has time to begin with, and so the times that there are available, and if your department has budget, and if, and you're able to get away, you know, there's just not like a seminar or something or a Coursera class for this specific issue. So I just thought it was a really telling moment when the syllabus that I made is almost like as a lark. It was serious stuff, but it was so popular. I think it goes to this question. And if you don't have a department that is working collectively towards thinking about the future of education, then it doesn't trickle down. And it's certainly not going to come ground up from the students. I mean, listen, that's not to knock students, but, you know, let's be honest here.
They got other things in their mind.
I mean, you hit on the head in that most of the faculty who are really contemporary or on top of things or innovative are either professional practice or adjunct professors, right? They're not the tenured or tenure-track professors, because the tenure and tenure-track professors are laser-focused on one thing to get their tenure. But they're the ones who have the voting power and the positions of planning the bigger...
Right, and therefore we should be supporting those people. Instead, everybody looks down their noses at the tenured faculty, and they think that the, you know, the adjuncts or the professors of practice are the ones with all the knowledge, and they're like the cool kids in the department, and it should be reversed.
Well, it was at one time though, wasn't it? I mean, this big drive for adjunct, I thought, was it mostly financially driven by university administrators?
But wasn't it? It had to do with all of these students. I mean, Temple University alone, their department is enormous. They have a huge department, and they have very few full-time faculty because the school won't give them the budget lines for it. So I don't think it's like it was anybody's conspiracy to bring on the adjuncts, and I don't think it had anything to do with the fact that the economy tanked and we've got a bunch of journalists out of work. You know, people are very, very excited about journalism and interested in it, and so a whole bunch of people have been enrolling in it.
Yeah.
So let me, you know, as a non-academic here, let me sort of see if I can understand this. The adjunct, my impression has always been that they were brought in because they're, you know, working in industry. They're what they bring is that they something that's more up to date to what's going on. Where, well, what is it that the tenured professor brings that maybe not being recognized?
I guess I should answer that since I'm part of the problem.
You're in the system.
As a tenure line faculty, you know, it really depends because, you know, certain journalism schools don't have a big research component, but you know, the tenure faculty are viewed as the anchor, the constant part of a journalism department. They're the ones, just by the letter of the law of universities, they're the ones who have the most voting power. They can sit on Senate committees, whereas, you know, folks who are not tenured have a ceiling in terms of how much influence they can have at universities. The benefit of adjuncts certainly is, you know, is multifaceted. One is they're relatively cheap. That's the brutal reality of it. But two, as you said, you can, you know, you're lucky, you know, at the low end, $3,000 to $4,000 per course. If you're experienced, six, maybe $8,000 per course, but that's not a lot of money. Yeah, I mean, that's
you can't make a living at it. Yeah, you can't.
You don't want to make a living off just that, right?
Right.
So their skill set is dynamically allocated, right? So if data journalism is hot next year, you can quickly find these folks to come in and do it, and you can tear down and build up courses very quickly. But quality control is always an issue, right? Especially if you have the same class needs to be taught through five or six sections. You need to coordinate those adjuncts to be consistent across the board, or you have very uneven skill sets of students coming out of those classes. So I used to be an adjunct coordinator for new media classes at USC, so I felt that pain of trying to coordinate adjuncts across sections. But in general, a lot of these journalism schools have adjuncts as kind of the anchor faculty in that sense, because
and unfortunately there's not a lot of spillover. So here's the other thing. Like, so fine, you're going to bring on these adjuncts and they're going to be experts in their individual areas. You know, you may as well enable them to have their knowledge spill over so that the rest of the faculty can also learn from them.
Right.
One of the things that, and that's what happens in business school. So if you look at a lot of MBA programs where they have a higher concentration of, you know, outsiders, non-academics teaching certain types of courses, there's more of that atmosphere, and and it doesn't exist in a lot of journalism programs. But again, I think that's because the teaching is so siloed. I teach reporting. That's what I've always taught. That's what I'm going to be teaching. You know, and we have a system that enables that.
And once the faculty member is tenured, it's very hard to prod them to enlarge their skill set to meet the needs of classes. Mm-hmm. Typically, what happens is the tenured faculty member, not all, but the temptation is there to just squat and say, you know, here's what I do, here's what I teach, work around what I do. And that's can sometimes be a big problem when you are trying to reconfigure curricula to meet the needs of students, yet you have static faculty skill sets.
Well, we're getting close to the end here, and we should probably try to figure out a way to wrap up here. If you guys could just sort of get together real quick and just give me an answer as to how we can solve this. we can. But no, let's. What's the one thing, I guess, that you're hopeful for where journalism education is at the moment? Amy, what's your thought?
I'm going to run the risk of sounding sort of like a silly fangirl, but listen, you know, Andrew's area of expertise is when I was at Columbia, shortly after I was at Columbia, Wikipedia was the enemy of all people who were journalists, right? And the very fact that Andrew exists and his subject area is Wikipedia and that he is treating it as the same kind of entity that is worthy of journalists is, you know, to me, that's heartwarming, right? That's exciting. And he's doing it at a school, American University, that has an amazing dean who is focused on gaming culture. You know, there's some crazy, crazy cool stuff happening at AU, and there's crazy cool stuff happening at West Virginia University and Elon University and Ohio University. There's pockets of really interesting things happening everywhere. So I think that there's a long way to go, but I am inspired by lots of very forward-thinking professors and academics and administrators who are doing some pretty great stuff. Now, the trick is to get everybody together doing all of that stuff together as we go forward. But at the moment, yeah.
So, Andrew, I feel like I should bar you from saying Wikipedia in your answer. if you want to say Wikipedia, you can.
It reminds me of the Simpsons episode where you could try to defend yourself from being fired without using the letter E. Okay, so how do I answer the question without using the word Wikipedia? Well, I think, you know, one of the things that I think we should do is push that idea of what we said before of the gateway degree, right? Trying to get people to go to journalism school that wouldn't have thought of going to journalism school in the first place, because once they, if you remove the label journalism from the degree and you look at what you do in journalism school in terms of storytelling, digital literacy, knowledge from public interest, sifting truth from fiction, thinking about the reliability of information, that is attractive to so many folks doing online content now. It doesn't matter whether they consider themselves a journalist or a content manager or a social media manager. There's so much that is useful. In fact, we see all the time people in PR in our school, and also when I was at USC, peer over the fence and say, oh man, those journalism students are doing really cool stuff. I want to do more storytelling. I want to do more of that stuff. But they were never really marketed towards folks who didn't think of journalism as, you know, anything but newspaper reporting. So I think we need to think of marketing journalism school as a gateway degree to more than just newspapers and reporting. And if you think about what other schools have done, like architecture school has done this successfully. Like people who train to be architects have gone off to do great things like design school or creating online spaces or human-centered design. Those are all born out of what architecture students have done. Or film school. You know, go to film school is a gateway to advertising and different types of short video content that's out there. So one of the things that we really need to do is, you know, think about journalism in a greater way. And I think one of the great examples of how we, you know, kind of stigmatize folks who don't go into pure journalism, if you remember the story of the Pulitzer Prize winner this year at the Daily Breeze newspaper, if people don't know where that is, that's basically Southern California, Long Beach, near Los Angeles. And there was the big story saying that Rob Kuznia, who won the Pulitzer, oh, by the way, he left journalism and he's working in PR. And that's pretty much what people thought. Like, oh, he's working in PR. This is a tragedy. People are leaving journalism to have to go to PR. But it's not that simple. If you actually looked at what he left to do, he's actually the coordinator for external relations at USC's Shoah Foundation. He's actually doing audiovisual interviews with survivors of the Holocaust and trying to do public education around the Holocaust. That's not what we consider Black Hat PR or evil PR. That's public relations considered very broadly, and he's still doing storytelling. He's still trying to educate the public. So I think we need more sophisticated ways of thinking about what journalism degrees and what learning journalism enables people to do in a broader way, and that's just kind of on journalism schools to market themselves and make themselves more relevant. And I think if we have a coalition of journalism schools to think about that in a greater way, we all be better off.
How about you, Doug? What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm going to still go back to the phrase, I stand in the intersection. So there are three things I've decided I'm going to start working on. I mentioned one of them earlier, and one was concerted cultivation. And that is essentially going out and making sure that there's a level playing field and everybody, no matter what school you go to, has an opportunity. And if that opportunity comes through something I do or somebody I know, there needs to be some kind of connectedness between all of us. The other thing I started thinking about is it comes out of design. It's like career design thinking. How do you get from in this case it's journalism education. How do you get from the curriculum that you're presented? You learn what you're supposed to learn, and then you enter the workforce, and then what do you do after that? Where do you go after that? I think it's not, there's no career ladder anymore, I don't think anyway. Mm-hmm. So what then is the design for somebody who's building a career? And the other thing I always do is lead by example. So if I can be an example to others, I'm going to keep doing it as long as I'm able. So I'll teach a class, as long as I can continue to work at NPR, I will. I go visit stations. I'll remain connected to everyone. And my best pleasure is to see young people getting jobs, and I had something to do with it.
That's cool.
And I think if more, and I think all of us are sort of like that in some way. It's easy to get bogged down in the negative things that happen, but I just refuse to do that. So that's what I think.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that. The day after our recording, Doug Mitchell contacted me by email. He wanted to elaborate on his point about standing at the intersections. So I'm going to give Doug the last word on this podcast about journalism education. Although I teach and come of a long line of academics, overeducated people, I focus pretty tightly on getting my hands dirty and outside of a formal classroom setting. I see my role as someone who sees if all the stuff, tech, ideas actually work in a MASH-type setting. Students compete to get in, they are selected, paired with a professional team member, and we spend less than a week reporting, producing, and posting. Once done, we tear down and move to the next project. Different people, a different location, different ideas. My class at Georgetown is 6 young ladies, 4 from immigrant families, who are first-generation college students. And I've charged them with finding stories in Native America, New Mexico, where we'll go for 6 days in July. The subject matter and the location was chosen by me. Journalism education must include a component of having people learn about and pull stories out of people who are different from each other. It's never been more important than now, and will only increase in importance. Groups have conferences and fuss amongst themselves about the state of things, the latest outrage online, etc. Everyone then goes home and does what? Journalism education is a human-centered vocation, was designed that way, and remains that way to me. The computers we carry around in our pockets have made everyone a journalist. We've all seen the camera videos. Given this, how does journalism education qualitatively remain a higher calling with standards and practices and teach this way doing things with meaningful value and public service? I think this is why I use the term standing in the intersections when describing my work.
You've been listening to It's All Journalism, a weekly podcast about the changing state of digital news. Find out more about us and download past episodes at itsalljournalism.com. You can also download episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. Follow us on Twitter at @alljournalism. It's All Journalism is produced in partnership with the Association of Alternative News Media. Thanks for listening.